Any big plans for Super Bowl Sunday, or are you just gonna sit it out because Buffalo's not there?
We'll have it on, but I'm really not going to be paying that much attention. I don't really care, but if I am rooting for anyone, it would be the Chiefs, just because,
Because
as a
Tom
person
Brady
from,
is the
exactly,
devil, is the devil.
yes,
Yeah.
you said it. That's exactly what it is. I don't need to see him winning another Super Enough of that.
I don't see Chris. I kind of see him, but I don't.
I don't either. I see his name up top, but then it says two of three, and it's a
Yeah.
call. I know that you said that Barb is a Chiefs fan,
Yeah.
that the household's rooting for the Chiefs.
Yes. I'll probably not watch, though. I'll probably podcast. I don't know.
I'm gonna have it on. We'll be in and out of
I'll
the room,
probably
whatever.
wa it'll watch it and Barb will be yelling at the screen half the time. But I guess it starts at 4:30 here.
Oh
So it's
yeah.
potential that I'll be almost done with it because I don't start podcasting till 7:30.
What do you have with Kyle today?
Yeah. At least I think he hasn't IM'd me back yet.
What are you guys covering?
Man, it's bit we skipped last week because he called it off, but I don't remember. Time Masters,
Oh,
the
Time Masters.
yeah, one through
I've
eight.
never watched that, so I'll be interested
Very
to hear
interesting series. I mean, it's kind of funny if you look
about it.
at it as a whole, but Time Masters and Future State Batman. Our next Batman and Future State, the Dark Detective.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. Chris, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hi, Chris.
Let me make sure I'm still recording because you joined really abnormally.
Yeah, that was weird. It actually, I don't know if it's a new thing to Skype, but it actually, I looked at the window and it just gave me the option to join the ongoing call.
Yeah, it was weird because we didn't hear. I saw you there, and then you weren't answering, and then it's like you hung up, and then you joined it again. And it looks like I'm recording, and hopefully you're recording. So,
Yeah, I didn't do any of that stuff. It must have been Skype itself that just
yeah.
left it there as the option from the unanswered call.
So
So
the
that's interesting.
software's improving. As long as the recorder keeps going, I don't care.
That's right.
Were talking about the Super Bowl. Who are you rooting for?
I really don't care, but I guess Kansas City by default, because I'll
Because
never
Barb's team
root
is
for.
that's Barb's team, so.
Yeah,
Chris,
that's
you
why.
basically
It
said
has
the
nothing to do
exact
with the
same
fact
words
that,
that
yeah,
I
I
said.
really don't
It's
care,
totally
but.
because it's Barb's team. It has nothing to do with who their quarterback is.
Oh, see,
Yeah.
no, that's not what I said. I it's because of the quarterback for me.
I'm being sarcastic.
I know.
But that it's Barb's team is a nice bonus. I wouldn't
Exactly.
want to have to root against your team.
Yeah, I wouldn't want you to have to root against your team, especially if you're in the same room.
What
You don't
happened?
recommend
What
it, huh?
happened 2 weeks ago? Were you rooting for the Chiefs, Mike?
No, I wasn't rooting for the Chiefs. Why would I root for the Chiefs?
Was she beating you up?
No, it was pretty mellow because
Because
we
blood
lost
sucks so
control
bad.
of the game like after the first quarter. I mean, it was interesting when it was like 9-0, but it got pretty quiet after that because the Chiefs dominated after the 9-0, lead.
Did. They're the better team. There's no doubt
I don't
about it.
know.
Oh, I think so.
I think
I think
Buffalo
it's a little.
I think Kansas City has a weak defense, man. And I don't think their offense is like what it used to be. But
The Bills are still coming up, hopefully, and they're about a year ahead of what I think anyone expected them to be.
Yeah, so. they did good the year before, and they did all right this year. I mean,
yeah.
So they're like trending well. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah, hopefully so.
I hope they're trending well, and the Patriots are trending bad. Like, I hope they're going down the toilet.
They're just a very annoying team. Whether you follow football or not, they're just annoying.
Yeah, they are. At least he turned down the Donald Trump award.
Yes, I was actually a little surprised that he did.
Yeah. I don't think he had a choice. Like I don't think he had a choice politically. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even if he wanted it, terrible. Like I think it would have hurt him, and I think that's the way he looked at it.
I don't know for sure
because I don't know the man. I just know he cheats. No, I don't like him.
Yep.
And I don't like that organization. I mean, the owner is always getting what is he had that controversy with the prostitutes and.
He enjoys his massages.
He enjoys his massages, yeah. That he does. I was just watching a retro movie for about the, I don't know, fifth time. I watch a lot of movies over and over again. Like, it's like habitual. Like, I watch more old stuff than I do stuff that I discover new. But, I watched The Night Shift, which has to do with prostitutes again, which was Henry Winkler and
I've never seen it.
Michael Keaton. Yeah, they turn a morgue into a like a prostitution thing.
Yeah, I'm vaguely aware of it, but
I think it might be Michael Keaton's first movie.
Oh, could be.
Yeah.
So, oh yeah, that reminds me. Why were you announcing every movie that was coming up on TV to Daryl?
I was movie phone.
That's what I said.
I was select one.
you
selected option two. No, because
why don't you tell me the movie you wanted?
I've been driving him crazy, so I get off on it. I don't know.
They have an antagonistic friendship.
Well, yes. I tease the ones I love. Like, Barb knows this. Like, if I don't tease you, like, in any form, that means I don't love you.
Oh, my God. It was just so funny because I didn't really look at Twitter much yesterday. So I'm scrolling through, like, everything since like, yesterday morning. Like every once in a while, all of a sudden a tweet from you comes up and it's to Daryl about what's on TV.
No, as me and Daryl get older, like we don't have like our common baseline for anything diverges dramatically.
Uh-huh.
Like,
it just was cracking me up. Daryl chasing Amy's about to start. Like, what is going on?
Such a great movie.
Well, you made me
and
laugh.
If you see Jay and Bob Strike Back, and you wait till the after credits, there is an awesome callback to Chasing Amy in that.
Okay, that's good to know. That's the one that I haven't seen yet. I know it's free on Prime. After watch.
Because do you know how they have that gay militant guy, like in Chasing Amy, that does that comic?
The
black guy, yeah.
Uh huh. Yep.
Which he's hilarious because he's so angry, like at the panels, like he gets off. Like they have a whole conversation about Lando Calrissian and in Star Wars, and how Darth Vader's like the Nubian god, you know, like. And it's I don't know. It's just a real cool. It's a real funny panel. And at the end of the panel, he pulls out a gun, but at the end of it, it has Jason Lee's character. I can't remember his name from Chasing Amy. He's the inker, and it has him in the a scene.
The tracer.
Yeah, the tracer.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out then.
Yeah, I love that movie. I love all the Kevin Smith movies except probably I didn't like Tusk.
I didn't see Tusk.
It's the only movie that I maybe I had to rewatch it, but it is so much like what is the human centipede? Not the humans. Yeah, it's the human centipede. Like the first
one. It changes
one.
To a walrus.
Yeah. But it has like the same story beats as that. So like I had watched it close to that, and it's like it lost all its like originality, you know, flair for me because I had already seen the human centipede.
What would be your guys, and because I don't know if you've seen them, but favorite Kevin Smith movie?
That one's tough. That's a tough one for me because I'm a fan.
But I am too.
I would have to go with Chasing Amy because to me, Chasing Amy has the most meaning. Like it has like so many levels of depth and emotion to it.
I'm 100% with you. That's my favorite as well.
And then I love takes on religion. So Dogma is the other one. But Dogma, for some reason, like on cable TV, it doesn't come up as much.
No. But Chasing Amy, I totally agree. It has that blend of his type of very crude humor, but it actually is saying important things too. It was just like,
yeah, it's
like
got it's got some like movie. Depth, and the dialogue and the conversations they're deep.
Yes.
I mean, yes, they have like a funny, ridiculous tone to it, but if you look at like just the concept of the name of the movie and what it is. Like
he's always chasing Amy.
Yeah, he's always chasing Amy. He threw away what the best thing in his life was.
Yeah.
He had the best thing in his life, and then he threw it away.
Yep. Yeah, I'm with you. That's mine as well.
Chris, you don't? Are you not a fan?
Not really. I mean, I've seen a lot of the earlier ones, but it's been a while. I really couldn't say, like, I would have to, like, I know at one point I would have said Chasing Amy, but I feel like I haven't seen it in such a long time. I don't know if I'd have to watch it again to see if I still liked it or not. So, yeah, I couldn't really say.
Well, three Chasing Amys, we'll go with that because you got nothing else.
But yeah, I saw that you guys were I wasn't here, so you guys were talking about a whole bunch of stuff that didn't qualify for the podcast last time.
We're breaking
the rules.
We're big into the WandaVision. It's kind of retro though, like it's got retro themes. It does. It goes back to like the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s.
I'm laughing because you're bending the rules.
We have no one to enforce them. I am the worst person with rules. Like
I was just gonna say,
my whole podcasting career is the course of breaking every rule. Because I'm a mood reader. Because I need to change it. I can't stay on focus. I break
don't
my
like
own
to,
rules.
Don't like to edit.
Don't like to edit, yeah.
He's a rebel, Dottie.
We talked about that in Mandalorian a lot, and I thought our Mandalorian discussion was cool because you had showed your kids that. Like I thought that's what was... made that conversation special.
It was cool to know that they got something out of it as well.
We had this weird anomaly with Disney Plus app. Like it would not show us the seasons. Like you go season one or season two, And then I would switch it to LTE, and then I would see it, and I could switch back to wireless, and then I could still see it and play it. But then I'd switch back and then reboot it and then try to just go off of wireless and it wouldn't pick up. And it was just Disney Plus for one night. It was weird.
Wow.
Was very strange.
That is weird.
Did you see The Little Things?
No.
I liked it. That's controversial.
Is that the one with Denzel Washington?
Yeah.
Okay, no, I haven't seen it yet. Is it good?
It depends on who you ask.
I'm
For
asking you.
well, if for me, I thought it was amazing because of the ending. I think the ending was what made it special, and I think 90% of our circle doesn't like the ending. So
Really?
I'm that 10% because for me, the ending made it different, like from something like Seven and something like other, those kinds of suspenseful movies. I think the ending like differentiated from, because in tone the movie is like Seven, like it's sort of like that, like in terms of speed, Seven's kind of a slow burn. It's a mystery, you're trying to find a killer, that kind of stuff. And then you have payoff at the end. Well, this one has a weird payoff, but it is really good. I mean, having said that, you'll like the acting if anything else. The
I'm gonna write some of these
three
down just so
actors
I
are
can forget
good.
later on.
Yeah. It has the guy from that plays Freddie Mercury.
Oh,
Remy, I can't remember his
Rami
last name.
Malek or something?
Yeah. And it has Jed Leto,
Oh, okay.
the guy who played the Joker in Suicide Squad. He's
The guy
good.
from Mike
I
Judge.
actually think he, in my opinion, was the best of he was the best part of the movie.
Wow. What is it called again? Little Things?
The Little Things, yeah.
Writing it
It's on
down so.
HBO Max.
Yeah. I just sometimes like when we're sitting in front of the TV and we can't decide what to watch, I forget like that we have stuff that we're interested in. I just start searching and searching. We don't end up watching anything. So this way actually
That's
kept a guide.
modern phenomenon. Just so many choices that
Yep,
See,
yep.
that's what I think. Like, if I went all streaming, I'd have such a hard time. Because streaming, you almost have to find it. Do you know what I mean? Unless somebody tells you, or the algorithm shows it to you on your app, you don't know what's all there. Whereas, like, if you have cable or old school stuff, you have a guide and you can go look at it. And you know exactly it's going to show or when it's going to show.
Yeah, well, you know what? My HBO guide hasn't come in quite some time.
Yeah, we were just
Now,
talking about the HBO guides. I miss them. I would love if HBO Max would, even if they put out a digital thing, like you can go, you could find like the big blockbusters. Like you could go right now and see that Suicide Squad is going to be in August and Kong is what, April, or King Kong versus, I can't believe you chose Godzilla, man. I just
Godzilla. I've always
no no
listen.
no but
Since I was like 4 years
King
old,
Kong
I've
is
loved
about
Godzilla.
the heart.
No, I've
He's
always loved
like he,
Godzilla.
the ape is closer to us than a dragon. Like who gives an emotional crap about a guy who spits fire?
No.
He's a monster that doesn't care about you. King Kong has emotions. Like he
Did they make ever make
understands.
a song about King Kong? I don't know, but there's a song about Godzilla.
Oh, there's songs about King Kong.
Oh, is there?
It's not by Blue Oyster Cult,
I didn't.
but I do like Blue Oyster Cult. They're one of my. There are certain songs by Blue Oyster Cult that I just don't get sick of. Don't Fear the Reaper. God, I love it.
I agree.
Godzilla, I like a lot, and Burning for You. All
I
the
have
good hits, but I can listen to them over and over again.
Let me ask you, did you have this album? It's called, the album is called Imaginos. It's Blue Oyster Cult.
No, I came don't, out, but I'll check it out.
It's, now, I mean, for me, it's like a huge, like, nostalgia thing because, like, I've been listening to it since, like, 1986. But I love it. It's like this one long, I don't know what the story is, but it's kind of like a theme album.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just think it's absolutely fantastic. Imaginos by Blue Oyster Cult. Robbie Krieger of The Doors, I think, actually played guitar in a lot of the songs.
Relation? Or is that what? Is he related to you?
I wish. No, it's not spelled the same.
Yeah, Keith Knudsen's a big fan of yours, Rob.
Oh, really? he's a great guy. I like Keith too.
How does Godzilla go? Those other two songs that you mentioned, I know how those go, but
there goes Tokyo. There goes Godzilla.
Godzilla. we don't give it justice, but you could go to YouTube and
because I can't sing.
Is that one? Did they not? Is that one not as well known? Because the other two that you mentioned, Mike, I hear those all the time on like classic radio.
No,
and stuff,
Godzilla. Godzilla, I would say, is probably in their top five hits. Wouldn't you say, Rob?
Doing a really bad job.
Definitely. I would say that it might be number three. After
I would actually put it at number three too.
Yeah.
Guys must just be doing a really bad job of singing.
Yes. Well, I can attest that I am, Chris.
Well, Blue Oyster Cult's like one of those bands that they have a lot of good songs, but I never remember the names of them. Like I've heard. It was a time when you listened to like the whole albums and stuff. Mm-hmm. But now that we're in the world of demand, you don't as much listen to whole albums. Although I did buy the Kenny Hoopla recently and I like it a lot.
You know what I find myself doing now that I'm been working from home? I go through phases. Like sometimes I have a TV, well, not TV, the iPad on in front of me while I'm working, and I'm just like watching shows that basically you can just listen to, like whether it's like that David Letterman Netflix show or whatever.
Yeah.
And then other times I've got podcasts on. Other times I was really in the mood to listen to music, so I brought down my old CD player, plugged it in, and just started putting entire CDs on one after the other. For about like 3 weeks, so yeah. That was a lot of fun, and a lot of them were like those, you know, ones that I bought or originally first heard in like the late 80s, early 90s. So
yeah,
it's like wow, listen to this whole album in 20 years or whatever, you know.
Yeah, I do that with my old vehicle when I drive it. I have a tape player and a CD player, and I'll listen to that. Barb bought me a tape player and CD player for the new vehicle that go Bluetooth, but
you
I
know,
haven't
I can't
used them yet.
Have a CD player in the new one. They don't do those anymore.
They
huh?
don't do them anymore. Yeah.
When I got my 20 my last bug, which what was it, 2019, 2018? It still has a CD player, but it's probably one of the last years that they probably did that.
Yeah, I think so.
So, Chris, how have you been? What have you been up to lately?
Not too much, really. I mean, out of the ordinary, because, you know, winter and pandemic.
Not a whole lot to keep you indoors a lot.
Yeah. Which, you know. Wasn't it's exactly just like man about the town to begin with, so.
But if it's not the pandemic, it's the freezing cold temperatures.
Yeah.
Are you guys getting dumped on like New York City or no?
No, but it did snow this weekend. I woke up this morning and it was snowing. It must have snowed all last night. We probably have a 2 or 3 more inches. So, I mean, it's not like we're getting killed, but like Chris, I don't know what you got, but. Since Friday night, we probably got about, I don't know, five inches, I would say. But that's over the course of almost 3 days, so it's not a big deal.
Yeah. But yeah, it wasn't as bad here. And it takes a lot more. I don't know. We're a lot more prepared than other places.
As far as we don't have that
and stuff like that.
Density too, so that tends to help. It's I mean, if you get whatever, a foot or 18 inches of snow all dump in the course of 8 hours, that's enough to stop any city. But if it's over the course of 3 days, well, that's a different story. It gives the plows plenty of chance to go up and down the streets.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we didn't get much. What about you? Have you gotten a lot of snow, Mike?
We have moments, but not a lot.
Yeah. We barely had any at all until, what, a week or so ago?
Which is okay, though. The older I get, it's weird. The older I get, the colder I get. So, like, I understand why people migrate when they retire and stuff.
Yeah.
Because, for instance, like, if you could go back in time 5 years ago, I used to be able to take Harley out in, you know, 15-degree weather and not feel effect. And, like, today it was 20, or it was 22 wind chill, and I just didn't, like, my body aches, and Harley doesn't care. Like, she's old. I think she's like 70 now, like in human years, but she just, if the wind isn't blowing, she's fine. Like, I don't know what triggers in her mind, but she'll just go about her own business. But I get cold, and it's weird because I'm a very warm-blooded person, and it, as I'm getting older, it's changing.
That hasn't happened to me.
And I don't like to drive in the weather now.
No,
I absolutely hate it because in the back of my mind, it's like I don't want to go through getting in an accident or getting hit because you can't control people in the back of you or the side of you. And I was like, I don't want to deal with that from an insurance perspective and not having a vehicle X, you know, I don't know. I don't like it.
Yep. I hate driving in winter weather.
When I'm home, I don't mind it. Like, when I'm home and I can put a blanket on and sit and read comics, I'm fine. I'm ready for retirement. I just am. There's no doubt about it. I mean, there's things that I want to do, and I wouldn't mind going back to school and doing all the things that I wanted to do but never did because it didn't make money. Like, there are a lot of things I wanted to learn, but I kept myself from learning it because I knew I had to make money to live.
Yeah.
And I knew those things would never give me money. They might give me more satisfaction, but I've always been like a logical thinker. Like, you got to have money to do what you like. Well, when I retire, I want to do those things that I know would have never made me money, and I don't really care that they don't give me any money, but I want to learn about them.
Yeah, no, that's good. I mean, it gives you something to keep yourself learning and keep your mind active, and, you know, all that stuff, which is
amazing. I think you took the right approach, though. I took the opposite approach and don't recommend it.
Well, my parents always drove me towards, like, they'd always say, like, we don't have a lot of money, but these things that we give you or give you as gifts, if you want them, you have to choose something that you're going to make money to get them. That's why I get comics. I mean, I wouldn't be able to afford what the hell I'm doing if I didn't choose my occupation. There's no way in hell with $4 a comic book.
Oh,
shit, I'd be getting like 5 titles if I chose another occupation.
Exactly.
There are things that I see on the internet and I feel uncomfortable asking people. But I am so curious. I am just dying to, like, why can't you guys podcast about this? Because there are people on the internet that I know don't have jobs. They do not have jobs, but they still buy comic books. And not only do they not have jobs, but they have kids and they have, you know, a family that they have to support.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, how do they still afford this hobby? Like, I am just flabbergasted, and I just want to know, but it's like one of those uncomfortable things that I couldn't even IM these people because I don't know them that well. But
yeah.
I would just say, well, how do you buy this comics? Like, how do you do it? I know you're out of work because you post it, and I know you had to move somewhere because you couldn't afford your house anymore, but you still could afford these comics. Like, how do you, like, my brain just doesn't like understand that. Like, cause if I lost my job, I go into weird modes, like where I know what I can afford and what I won't live outside my means, like, ever.
You know what? But I think that's the difference is some people.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's maybe some of the problems that they're having just in general, in life, but they don't have that set of priorities. So they get themselves into these bad situations.
Yeah. For example, when I was first getting into a house, I cut getting any comic. Like, it's like severing something that I have never severed before. But like, I knew I had to get that down payment to where it was. I knew what I had to do, and I knew I had to cut a hobby just to do it.
Yep.
So I know I can do it. I just don't want to.
but now you're not in a position where you need to either. But you know that if you were in a position, if something changed, you'd be able to do it. Which
yeah, I already know what I would do. Like. It's a lot easier now to cut the cord than it was many years ago because we have digital now.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
I could 100% go to the Marvel Unlimited and the DC Infinite and have almost an infinite reading experience, like just keeping caught up with everything that comes up every week.
Yeah.
And not have to pay that much. I just love the physical form. Like it's something that I just adore, and it's just hard to. That's the hard part.
I mean, I'm kind of the same as you. I mean, logically, I'm like I could just stop. I could just get a few actual physical issues of things that I really want to have or whatever, and just read the rest digitally. But I can't bring myself to do that. I don't want to. Just read.
Well, it's not just the reading experience. I think for us, it's the collecting experience. Like, it's fun to collect.
Me, for sure, yeah.
And it's fun to, like, have sequential things. Like, I don't know what it is, but I have a run of this. Do you know what I mean? Like, to have that, it's, like, awesome.
Yeah. Well, I think
it's not just about the reading in that, too.
You know, that, like,
well, it makes it peaceful for me. It gives me a sense of calmness. I don't know what it is, but it's a good thing. Without comics, I think I'd be like high wired, like stressed out most of the time. Without that, Barb and Harley relieves a lot of stress because. Animals, they don't understand that, and their lives are, I don't know how they do it, but without coming home to Harley, it's a difference, or any kind of pet. Before that, it was Risa and Scooter. They just, like, let you decompress. Like, it's a strange feeling, but I don't know how people without pets, like, ever get that, like, I don't know how to say it, but it's like this unconditional love or support that isn't verbal.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and they've done research and stuff that literally relieves stress.
Mm-hmm.
Like petting a dog or a cat, like, relieves.
Yeah, that's why they do it to, like, senior homes and stuff. They'll bring dogs by and do stuff like that.
And why that is, I don't have any idea.
I don't know, but I know it. I know it's real, and I don't think it's like psychological.
No, I don't either.
I think it's chemical, like that. Like they've actually been able to test that petting a dog, like releases endorphins in your brain.
Interesting, isn't it?
I'm petting a dog right now.
I don't have anyone in the room but me.
Harley's in the room, but she's on the couch, and she's not happy with me because I chose not. I told her when I'm done podcasting, we're supposed to have 50-degree weather today. I said, you know, it's going to be a lot nicer. Let's do it. And she just looks at me like, and she, Harley hates, like, I can't even explain. But when she hates when I'm on the elliptical, God dang, I don't know what
why?
I don't know like what psychological trauma I put her through when I'm on that. But it's almost like she's like, you're moving and I want to move too, you know, kind of thing. I don't understand why you're doing that in place when we can go outside and do that.
Right. You're being very selfish.
Well, there are times I even tell Barb it freaks me out and I have to get off the elliptical because she starts hyperventilating.
My God.
Like a crying, like you can see her whole body like shaking, and I'm like, oh, that's freaky. So I'll get off on it and just say, hey, Harley, we're going to go. Don't worry about it. Like, I never leave her flat. Like, I don't ever not take her.
That's funny. I mean, is she just scared of it?
I don't think she's scared of it. She'll go right up to it. She tries to knock my legs off of it sometimes. I don't know what it is, but it's weird.
Yeah.
She doesn't do it so much like after she's gotten her walk, but like if she hasn't gone and I'm on there, which is usually the case, because in the mornings I usually wake up, I put something on the TV, and I go on the elliptical for half an hour. And then I take her for a walk, and then I go to work. That's like the order, my sequence of events. And when she's down here and not upstairs with Barb, she just hates it when I'm on the elliptical.
That is funny.
And Barb has a bike, and she'll go on the bike sometimes, and she does, man, she doesn't like that either.
We bought an elliptical. I got back on it, not yesterday, the day before, but I need to get focused on that and try to do it every day.
I think entertainment drives like my motivation to do it. Like that's where I watch the most TV is on the elliptical. And I know Bill Bomer does the same thing. He'll like watch entire seasons on his elliptical or treadmill.
It's there, and you know, in front, it's in the room with the TV. But it's like, oh, I could sit in the recliner, or I could get on the elliptical.
Yeah,
much more comfortable in the recliner.
And that's when choosing the right program. You always want a program that will shift your mind out of that you're exercising, like as much as possible. Because if 100%. You're thinking that, I got 10 more minutes, I got 5 more minutes, you want a program you don't know the time, and sometimes you'll even go longer because you're watching the program. That's the kind of show you have to choose. And I've been pretty good lately. Like, I've been watching a lot of the Marvel Netflix, and then I got tired of that. And then I watched that movie that I told you about that was insane. I finally watched the ending of it. Oh, my God.
Wait,
I just can't. That the bad, whatever it was, the Keanu Reeves post-apocalyptic cannibals.
Yep.
That's crazy.
Yeah, you finished it, huh?
Yeah, I finished it. I can't believe that the movie exists. Like, I just, who greenlit this? Like, I just don't get it, but it's awesome that it does. I just don't see the appeal factor for any kind of market other than people that like different things that are B films. Like, it's just weird. But now I'm watching this Spain thing. It's called The Money Heist, and it's really good on Netflix. I think it was
Cool.
Nerdy Legion that turned me on to that.
I see
That's with
they recorded a new episode, so that was good.
Have you seen that?
Haven't seen it.
Money Heist
Yeah.
with Tom Hanks and Shelley
No,
Long.
this is a series from Spain. Is there a Money Heist movie?
No, I'm talking about the Money Pit. I was just
Oh
joking.
yeah. The Money Pit. I think we covered that on this show. I
Yeah, it might
remember
have.
watching it 'cause I hadn't seen it and I think you did.
No, that was The Burbs.
Oh, that was The Burbs. That's right. Tom Hanks commonality.
Yeah.
Oh,
And
yeah.
like around the same time too, I think, like within a few years of each other anyway.
Who's in
1980s.
the Money Pit? Shelley Long, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's in the she was in the Night Shift too. All right. You guys want to get started?
Oh,
Sure.
All right.
Why not?
Who wants to go first?
I can kick it off.
All right. What do you got for us?
I say that, but I need to bring it up still. So
I
you
don't.
guys want,
I do not know how you guys review on the iPad. Like, I just don't. I can't do it. I have to, when I read on, I cover books on the iPad, I have to remember everything. I can't slide and move it. I just can't do it.
Why?
I don't know. It's a mental thing. So all my content today is
That
digital,
doesn't make sense.
and I'm just gonna go from the cuff.
Well, it's fine too.
Do you guys want the light or the dark?
Let's start with the dark and move towards the light.
I was just gonna say the same. Okay. We need some light at the end of the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So the one thing I read was Archer and Armstrong's Zero.
Ah, that's my favorite.
So
My first
this
Valiant
was
comic.
number zero was.
Yep, that was what made me a Valiant fan. Like if it
Oh,
wasn't for
okay.
that comic, I wouldn't have gotten into Valiant.
Heck, I love that cover. That cover's just great.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you've covered this on the show or not, Mike.
I do not think so. I haven't
Can't
covered much
remember.
Valiant.
Yeah. But it's now it doesn't say, so I read it in the classic collection from Valiant, which has zero and then 1 through 12 in volume one. And it has zero as the first issue in the volume because that it takes place chronologically, but was it the first thing that came out or was it
It was.
It
it
was
was
right
like
before
literally the month before
Unity.
number one.
It was right
Okay.
before Unity too, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Well, yeah, number one is part of Unity.
So it's really a nightmare to try to get into Unity,
Yeah, because you're part
like
three Unity.
because you're going through all the titles plus the Unity comic book. That's 18 issues of.
Yeah, they include number one here, which is part of Unity, and I started reading it. I ended up falling asleep. I started reading, I think I read most of it after reading Zero, and it really, Unity really hurts it. Like, at least as a part of a collection, as a standalone issue, it kind of stinks.
It's a weird way to start
That
your
is
series too.
true, but if it wasn't for Unity, I wouldn't have like went out and got everything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, in
it drew me in, yeah.
Reading it, and like, I know they don't really have much, they don't have too much of a choice, but it just, you know, it I know the, I understand the reasons for doing it at the time, but unfortunately, like, it kind of messes things up a little bit. But anyway, Zero is a really good issue, though. It's called Revival. And it's the origin story pretty much of Archer and of the two of them becoming a team. And it starts out with Archer playing basketball. So it's the, as you mentioned, creative team is Bob Layton as the writer and Barry Windsor Smith as the penciler and inker. It starts off with Archer playing a horse, like, basketball game against some other kids. And, he's making crazy shots and he's, you know, he just says that he explains it by God guiding his hand. It's just something that happens to him sometimes where he can't miss because God is on his side. And one of the other kids punches him in the back of the head. They're playing for money, and he's convinced that Archer cheated somehow. Archer says, you know, he, with God on his side, he could take him down, but his father tells him that he should always turn the other cheek. And so he gives him the money back and says, I forgive you. And then runs home to tell his father what he did. You know, he thinks his father will be proud of him. And so his parents aren't expecting him back. In fact, they explicitly told him, it turns out, that he shouldn't come home before 6 o'clock. Because he's not supposed to interrupt their quote-unquote prayer sessions. Well, his father's coming out of the bedroom, putting a robe on over, you know, over not a lot of clothing. And it's not clear if he has anything on other than the robe, maybe like some underwear. And Archer's mother is in the doorway behind, and she's got some kind of negligee or something on. And so his father starts... His father ushers him away from the room and down the stairs. But the perspective changes so that we can see inside the room. And there's a young man on the bed tied up in ropes, and like there's blood splattered on his body. Not a lot of it, like just a little here and there. Yeah, they're up to something pretty nasty, in other words. So the next scene we see, if we hadn't guessed already, that his parents are like lead a ministry. His father's a like a televangelist sort, you know, and he's encouraging the people that he's preaching to give their money, of course, and people are being brought up to so that he can lay hands on them and heal them. And a girl, young woman in line whispers to him that, you know, she's been so bad she doesn't even want to say it out loud. Other people could hear her. So she whispers in his ear that her mother caught her touching herself. And she ran away from home because she was so embarrassed, so ashamed. And so he tells her that he thinks it'd be good for her to pray with him and his wife together tonight in private.
This sounds a little suspicious to me.
Yeah, just a little bit. Mm-hmm. So that night, you know, they put Archer to bed, and Archer, we see that Archer, you know, he wants attention from his parents, and he's upset that they pay so much attention to other people in the flock, quote unquote. They listen to every lamb in the flock except for him, and they you know, just tell him to hush and go to sleep. And during the night, he's kind of using his power again. His blessing he feels is from God, making baskets, you know, shooting crumbled up pieces of notebook paper into his trash can. We see he's missed a whole bunch, and then he's, you know, but he prays for God's help, and he starts making crazy shots, and he's like, it's happening again, it's happening again. And so he rushes out of his room, just yelling for his parents, telling them they got to see before it stops again. And he busts in the door, and to see his father. He's got the girl who confessed to him earlier on. Looks like she's at least unconscious and half naked in his arms. His mom's in her underwear sitting on the floor, surrounded by Polaroids, holding a knife. And there's, whether it's the same person as earlier or not, but there's someone that's also tied up on the bed. So Archer obviously is shocked by this, and so his father drops the girl on the floor and says, I suppose it was just a matter of time anyway, and punches him in the back of the head. So Archer wakes up a little bit later based on the time. He's bleeding from the back of his head, and he finds himself in the kitchen, surrounded by fire. So he prays for the power again, and uses his abilities to throw the dog's dish. He banks it off of the toaster and knocks a knife off the wall into his hand. So it's satisfying to see him use his, you know, based on what he's just been through, it's satisfying to see him use his powers in that way. And he is able to escape. He gets clear. He starts to escape, and a firefighter finds him and carries him out, just as his parents are pretending to outside with another firefighter, pretending that, or just telling the firefighter it's okay that you know, they know that they've done everything they can to try to save their son, and he's joined his Heavenly Father now. But the firefighter comes out with Archer, and and we see that his parents have this quiet conversation about it. The mother says that they should have used a knife and a suicide note. So they're pretty awful people. Hadn't guessed. Now Archer's not he's not doing too well. We actually see that he sees the light, so to speak. He sees himself moving towards the light, so he's unconscious. But he stops and he thinks, no, I gotta go back. I gotta do something about my parents. So he wakes up in the hospital bed, and his parents are there. The doctor says that he experienced an extended cardiac arrest, but we think he's going to be okay. So right even at that moment, the father asks the doctor if they could be alone with him so they could pray together as a family. And thankfully, the doctor says that should probably wait till the morning. He needs rest, and ushers them out. So they leave telling Archer that they'll be back in the morning to take care of him. So Archer knows what's going on at this point, and he unhooks his IV and climbs out the window. And then basically we get like 6, 7, 8, like 8 years of his life summarized in like a page and a half, basically. It really kind of moves things forward, which I think was like an effective tool of storytelling. I mean, a lot that happens, but it's basically his training montage in a sense. You know, we see that he ends up on a, he hitchhikes away from town, stows away on a boat, and ends up in this sea south of China. We know he goes to a whole bunch of different temples to try to find someone that will train him, and it takes him a while, but after a couple years of training, he's learned a lot, but he's still driven by anger, you know. Couple more years pass, you know, and that status sort of continues. Even after a few more years, you know, he's training and his katas are performed to insults and threats. He's like, "You're a holy roller puss bag, Papa," and "Mama, you're a butcher," as he's training. He's confronted by his master about it, and he doesn't lie, but you know, he says if you can't, his master says, if you can't put this aside, you have to leave. And a month later, that seems to be what happened, because a month later he's back in Los Angeles. And this is where he meets Armstrong, who's just propped up against the side of a building like a homeless person, bum and change. Archer gives him $5, or offers him $5, and he's like, "Wait, hang on a second. Why would you give me that much money? And what can I do for you? You look lost." And he's like, "Well, I look lost because I am lost, in my purpose." So Archer says, "Well, let me tell you what, let's go buy some beer and we'll talk about it." So later that day, Archer's drinking, Armstrong was drinking, of course, and Archer's not, but Armstrong's just telling him all these stories, which, you know, they take place like centuries ago. So Archer gets kind of sick of it, and you know, it's of him quote unquote lying to him, and he's sick of, you know, the kind of the nature of his stories as well, involving a lot of debauchery and whatnot. And Armstrong says, "Well, fine. Well, how did you end up keeping me company anyways, a guy like you?" And Archer says, "Well, my story is almost as outrageous as yours, but mine's true. I was murdered by my parents, but I came back from the dead to destroy them." And Armstrong says, "Sounds reasonable." So that's how Armstrong learns of, you know, Archer's past and his journey. And Armstrong says he kind of reminds him of his crazy brother Gilly, referencing Gilead. So he's like, "Well, you know, if you you're gonna have to figure out some way to support yourself." And So Armstrong introduces him to a guy at a bouncer at a bar. But it doesn't work out too well. Bouncer, or the guy that owns the bar, breaks a bottle over the back of his head for some reason and kicks him out. I don't know if it's because Archer's got this like little mini crossbow. I'm not sure if it was to steal that or. So Archer tries something else. He goes to a basketball court, tries to. No, he doesn't steal his bow because Archer puts it up against $50 to play a bunch of guys in horse and basketball. And immediately does this like awesome shot where he bounces the ball off the ground into the basket. So they just start beating on him for thinking that he cheated. Naturally at this point in his life, Archer can handle himself and he does so. But then confronts a guy nearby in a suit and asks him why he's been following him. So this guy introduced himself and says, I have a job for you. I have a job tracking down a great evil that's loose on the earth that walks as a man but's not a man. He wants him, that if this evil is allowed to exist, that it's going to cause an imbalance and all of existence will topple. That the sect that this guy belongs to has been hunting this evil for 2,569 years. He's very specific about that. So they've recently tracked him down to this tavern. And it actually turns out to be the same place that Armstrong took Archer to get a job. And just as they're about to walk up to it, the owner of the bar that threw Archer out earlier comes flying through the window. And who do they see inside that seems to have been responsible for that, but none other than Armstrong. And the guy from the sect tells Archer to track him down, and they start, he grabs Armstrong and start talking to each other. He says, Archer tells Armstrong he's got to face this guy. He seems like a good person. And Armstrong's like, no, I'm out of here. And Archer flips him over his shoulder into the top of the car nearby. Armstrong's complaining about the fact that he believes these people that he's evil. And Archer says, you know, your story is no more outrageous than mine is. And they're fighting all this time, and Armstrong actually manages to catch Archer's punch, but then he doesn't take the advantage to counterstrike, and that gets Archer's attention. He says, why didn't you take your advantage? And Armstrong says, look, I'm not trying to hurt anybody. I'm trying to run away. Meanwhile, these other people are trying to kill me. They're a bunch of religious hypocrites, and they don't like me because I'm not clean and pure like you. He's like, so what are you going to do, kid? The issue ends with the men that belong to this sect opening fire on Armstrong. And Archer says, Mr. Armstrong, I may need your help to pacify these assassins. That's how the two met. Issue one picks up right from this spot. But it's but it immediately is interrupted by Gilead, Armstrong's brother, arriving and teleporting them away and into the whole Unity stuff. So, because it's chapter 3 of Unity, so it's, you know, kind of disrupts things. But yeah, it was a really good issue. I you know, they, for as awful as what things are that's going on with his parents, they aren't super explicit with what they depict, but they really get the point across. And I think part of it is, like, I really like Barry Windsor Smith's art. Mm-hmm. But all of his people look like a little off, you know, like, or I don't know, like, he's got like a certain style to his faces.
Yeah.
Kind of,
yeah.
Like, it almost kind of lends itself. They almost look a little like alien. I don't know. It just kind of like lends itself well to these, like, quote unquote religious people that are up to some really nasty stuff. So,
yeah, that first issue is issue zero. I mean, that's, yeah, what I thought was such a great introduction to that.
One of the best comics ever, I think.
Yeah, it did such a great job.
Yeah, it is really good.
I don't feel that way about BWS though. There is something about his art, whether it be an Archer and Armstrong or Conan or whatever. I see what you're saying, but God, I just love that.
I like his art, but there's no mistaking who's drawing those faces.
There,
like,
is no mistake. You know it's BWS. You know it.
No, I don't mean it as a criticism. In fact, like, it's just like I said, like, lots of artists have a recognizable style, and it just happens that his style, like, the way that he draws faces, sometimes, you know, they like, Archer's father and Armstrong look totally different from each other, and Armstrong doesn't really have this quality, but he's good at, his style definitely lends himself to drawing this sort of, like, this bald, overly overweight, creepy kind of dude, just, I think, because the way he draws features, they're kind of, his facial features are kind of small a lot of the time, and I don't know, just combined with, like, the size of the guy's face, something about it just kind of lends itself. I thought it was good.
Well, very nice.
Yeah, he recently had a book in Fantagraphics called Monster, and I ordered it because I just love his art so much.
Well, if you don't mind, I'll go next. I was kind of in a nostalgic mood to read some comics that I had read years and years ago as a kid. I was kind of in a Marvel mood, too. So the first one that I read today was Defenders number 125, which is the first time on the cover. Well, it's not just the first time on the cover, but it actually transitions to the quote-unquote new Defenders. So this is an extra-sized issue at 125, and it kind of, at the beginning, it kind of gets you caught up with what was going on. And the original Defenders, the Hulk, Submariner, Silver Surfer, Doctor Strange, they've been transported across the cosmos to meet up with the Living Tribunal. So apparently in the past few issues, they had encountered an alien group on Earth that had kidnapped a bunch of people, and they had rescued the people. And now the Living Tribunal is explaining that because of those actions, it's going to happen one way or the other, that the Earth in a few hundred years is just going to totally be gone. But more importantly, the life on the planet is going to be destroyed very quickly, and the Earth itself will be totally gone in 200 years. And this is due to the events that these four had participated in. And even though it seems like it obviously was a good thing what they did, it's a whole domino effect of this group of aliens that live very, very far away. But it was this warlord's son that was on Earth that was part of this group that had kidnapped these people. And so he's going to end up getting word that his son had died, is supposed to inherit his throne, and he and his armada come wipe out all life on the planet. So intermixed with this kind of explanation with the four originals, we also see what's going on in New York City at the time too. And so the other members of the Defenders at this time are Beast, Valkyrie, and Gargoyle. And Iceman has come to visit Beast, and they're hanging out. And they actually get in from a night of drinking. And that's when Valkyrie arrives as well. And she is now responsible for keeping track of and making sure that Moondragon is behaving. Moondragon had tried to take over the universe apparently a few months prior, maybe the year prior in the Avengers. she had been judged by Odin, and Odin sentenced her to actually go to Earth and try to find her humanity. And in addition, put a band around her head that severely limits her psychic power, so she can't control people. As she was able to before. Beast is very unhappy that that Moondragon is there. Doesn't want really her involved with the group, and particularly because Beast has been thinking it over and kind of wants to end the status of the Defenders as a non-group. He wants to actually get them more organized, so they become more of a cohesive unit, kind of like the Avengers and some other teams are. So this is his plan, and he kind of feels like this kind of monkey wrench of Moondragon is going to mess things up. So anyhow, after that quick encounter, they start climbing the stairs, Iceman and Beast, because they're quite hungover. And who else is there that just arrived to visit? But Warren Worthington III, the Angel. So now you have three original X-Men all under the same roof. So, of course, they couldn't be more happy to see each other. And they have a housekeeper similar, like Jarvis, for the Avengers. They had a lady that keeps the house at the Defenders location. And she tries to get them to settle down because she has an announcement to make that she just received a last-minute phone call from Patsy Walker's father, and that she's Hellcat, and her and Damon Hellstrom are getting married. However, it's very late notice. They're getting married the next day. So not that morning, but the morning after. So everyone starts celebrating and saying, yes, of course, we're going to be there. Unbeknownst to them, there's somebody listening outside that's dressed in like a brown dog costume and goes running away. You get more explanation of the backstory. What would you say?
It's a furry.
Yes, yes. So in between, we're learning more about the armada that's supposedly arriving and or will arrive at some point down the road. However, the Defenders, the original Defenders, don't really believe this. They have Dr. Strange use his soul self to see if the Tribunal is telling the truth. Tribunal says, well, he doesn't. He really can't lie. And Dr. Strange confirms that yes, this is something that's going to happen. Basically, what ends up happening is the newer Defenders, the Earth-based bound Defenders, travel over to go to Ohio to meet up and celebrate the wedding of Hellcat and Hellstorm, son of Satan. And it's interrupted by this dog person who's named Mad Dog, and he's had arranged a group called the Mutant Force to back him up. And it's three or four just strange-looking characters, really bizarre, odd costumes. They don't look, they're not great costumes, is what I'm saying. One guy's just dressed in like blue and purple with claws for hands. Another one's dressed in pink and blue. Another one looks like a reptile with a dark green skin and a light green costume. Another one is just wearing yellow and purple. Just very plain looking costumes and just not inspired at all. But regardless, Mad Dog's in charge and they interrupt the wedding, break in and start fighting. Turns out Mad Dog is actually Patsy Walker's first husband. I forget his name now. It was Buzz something. I remember that. And
Lightyear, I think.
Buzz, yes, Buzz Lightyear. How did you know that?
He watched Toy Story.
It's like Buzz Baxter. Knowledge of
Buzz Baxter. So
I mean, it could be now. They're owned by the same company.
Exactly. So
I find Moondragon sexy. I don't know what it is, but maybe it's her costume. But all the skin that shows on her—it's amazing. All that and the green.
So they get into a huge fight. Moondragon actually tries to stop Matt. First of all, Moondragon is extremely arrogant and.
She's a
really
titan,
doesn't...
though, isn't she? Yeah. Like, she's yeah. a daughter of... When you think of
the... herself a goddess, and she considers... I mean, she thinks that the universe would have been better off if she had taken over, because she genuinely wanted peace for the universe.
Yeah.
And she thought the best way to get it was to take control of the universe.
But Thanos is a titan, so, like, she's the daughter of one, right? Or
yeah,
is she an actual titan?
No, I don't remember. It said who her father was. Was it... Was Thanos her father?
I don't think he's her father. I thought it was the gardener or something. I don't know. Maybe she's with the collect all those weird characters.
Yeah. So I mean, she really places herself, you know, well above humanity. She basically acts, you know, that way. But
she started off as a villain though too.
Yeah, she was. She was
in Marvel 2 and 1, I think.
Yeah.
It's their first
so,
appearance.
It's like they're trying, you know, I mean, even though she's acting like this, she does step up and try to stop Mad Dog. But because of the band around her head and his feral nature, he's actually able to mentally fight her off. But he's very bitter about Patsy leaving him. Apparently he was crazy and abusive, and he's even crazier now that he's ended up getting powers from this secret organization. Before too long, with the help of Hellcat and the Son of Satan, they beat off Mad Dog and his group. And you know, it takes a little bit, and it's a real good fight, but they work really well together as a team. So back across the cosmos, Living Tribunal further explains that the way that this is going to come to be, that the end of life on Earth, is if these four original defenders stay together as a pseudo team. And the only thing that they can do to prevent this from happening is to stop, associating with each other. So they stop and they have to think about what they're going to do, of course, and how much they believe this. But back in Ohio, Beast kind of expresses his opinion again, like, you know, we did an amazing job. You know, I say, let's do this. Let's actually officially be a team. You know, we did a great job. So, of course, Iceman and Angel are in right away. They think that's great, the three of them together. But Gargoyle and Valkyrie agree as well. And Moondragon says, I'll join you too. And at first Beast is like, what are you talking about? And you know, Moondragon says, well, you know, I've got to be here with Valkyrie, because I have to stay by her side per Odin. So you're going to have me too. And he says, you know what, that's fine. You actually pulled your own weight and helped out. So that's great. Long live the new defenders. And then appear the original four. And they explain that without going into the background explanation, they basically just say, you know, we started this. It's time for us to move on. We're handing the future over to you. And, you know, we wish you the best of luck. And those four fly off and jump away. And that's the end of this issue. And then it goes on with this new team until I think just after issue 150. And this is actually when I really started getting into Avengers or Defenders, Mike. I only had an odd issue here or there with older issues, but I have the whole run of the new Defenders, so it was just fun to kind of reread where this new team started, because, I mean, I didn't remember any of this or what the situation was, so it was fun picking it back up.
Yeah, this is when the X-Men became the sort of the Defenders.
Yeah, and I didn't say who the creative team was, but J.M. Matisse was the writer, and I really loved his work, especially in the 80s and 90s, and Don Perlin and Kim DeMolder were the artist, the writer, yeah. The artist and the inker.
It's your Valiant connection, Don Perlin.
Yeah, it was cool though. I really enjoyed picking that back up and reading that again for the first time.
It's my favorite group, not this incarnation of them, but
that's your group.
It was
though,
one
right?
of my favorite. It was my first team title that I got the entire run of.
What's your favorite incarnation? Is it the original four or?
It's when I had Valkyrie and Nighthawk and Son of Satan. And yeah. It was around the time of the Sons of the Serpent, which had, like, Hulk. Valkyrie, I think, was the core. Nighthawk was core. But it had so many heroes in that arc, like Daredevil and Yellowjacket. And, like, there was all kinds of craziness. Son of Satan. I just love Steve Gerber, and that's when, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking at issue number 22 is one of the main issues there.
If you look at the Sons of the Serpent, my favorite cover was the one where they have, like, these concrete serpents, like, encasing Nighthawk and Yellowjacket, and I can't remember if Daredevil's on the cover, but they're all encased in these, like, snakes because they're captured. Because it's weird that when you think about it, they had like technology to screw up the Hulk, like, yeah. So he would because the Sons of the Serpent weren't like Hydra, you know, they were just a racist group. Yeah. They had some technology because they screwed over the Hulk, but they weren't as powerful as like Hydra, but they took them on, man. And they had to bring in like other characters like Yellowjacket and Daredevil to come save the day. Luke Cage. Yeah. That was just awesome.
Cool. Yeah. Cool.
But Nighthawk is my Nighthawk, Doctor Strange, and Son of Satan. They're like my favorite characters. And I love when Hellcat is around. Hellcat was married to Damian.
Yeah, well, they got married right in the issue that I covered.
Yeah, so. Yeah. It's weird, too, because Patsy Walker she started off as like one of those Barbie clones or whatever
like
you want to call her.
Little...
Yeah, romance type. And they've kind of turned her into that again, which I don't like, but I like this darker version of her. And Defenders.
I don't mind that they recognize the, you know, that it's that.
Well, I don't mind the history of it, but then it turned into like something else.
Mm-hmm.
Some of her mini series I still buy them because I love Hellcat.
Well, there was that Patsy Walker that came out not long ago. It was like Patsy Walker, aka Hellcat.
Yeah.
Get that?
I did. I get everything with Hellcat. Like, she's currently in Iron Man now, too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting to have her in there. I've
She's
been reading that.
interesting character. I like her character a lot. I just don't like when they overdo. I don't know. I like her darker side than I do the.
Yeah, I ended up dropping that AKA Hellcat after a while because it was fine, but it just wasn't for.
Yeah, it was like in the vein of the Unstoppable Wasp, but I like the Unstoppable Wasp better.
Beach.
Like, I don't
That's
know.
the one I stuck with that one. I didn't stick
I
with
like
it.
the Unstoppable Wasp because she was like related to the whole situation and she was fresh and new. I don't know.
Yeah. Agreed.
But I'm gonna talk about two characters today, which 6 years ago, maybe 8 years ago, were two of my least favorite X-Men related characters, and now they're in my top five.
Oh,
So
this will
I'm
be interesting.
talking about Cable and Deadpool
Yeah,
because they are definitely in my top five now. Like t how times have changed. But this series I don't own. I want to own it, but to get the full series, I'd have to drop about $125 for 12 issues or so. And
just
I
do
didn't want to go there yet, so I read
it.
it digitally because I wanted to read it a lot, and I wanted to read the first appearance of the she Deadpool, which appears later, but I wanted to read it in sequential order. So I'm talking about Deadpool Merc with a Mouth by
Is she Deadpool? Is that somebody different? That's not Gwenpool, right? Are they two different characters, or
a Lady Deadpool, sorry.
Oh, okay. I have no idea who it is. You didn't say Gwenpool. I just didn't know who it was.
No, I do love Gwenpool. I think if it wasn't for Gwenpool, I would not have went back and wanted to read more Deadpool. Like, Gwenpool made me want to read more Deadpool. I didn't realize what I was missing or what I needed until I knew it was missing. I don't know. And then I think I'm was being influenced by Rob observations, but I'm glad I'm reading a lot of Deadpool for the first time. My first really exposure to Deadpool was Gail Simone's Agent X. That's when they were separating. I think they did it for licensing reasons. They didn't want to pay Rob for using Cable or Deadpool, so they made it Agent X and Soldier X. And I read Agent X, and it blew my mind. I was like, "Where is Deadpool?" And then, I watched the films over and over again, and I become like a Deadpool fan.
Well, I haven't really enjoyed Deadpool much in comics, but I have to say this Deadpool Merc with a Mouth, the covers, I love their covers, how they're like either look like magazines or they're like movie poster.
Yeah, Arthur Sidium doing those. He did like Marvel Zombies, and it's
And
interesting
people have
that.
those like there's a Pretty Woman movie poster with Deadpool and stuff, and
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
yeah.
So this series is an odd series, and I really wanted it to get the first appearance of Lady Deadpool, because later on, if you see. Rob Liefeld does the in some of the interiors on numbers 7 and 8. No, number 7, the introduction of Lady Deadpool. So I really wanted to get there, but in order to get there, I wanted to start at the beginning. And I also found it fascinating that Rob liked what Ed McGuinness was doing with Deadpool. So he stole him by giving him more money to come write, what is his name? His Captain America knockoff. I can't remember, but it's not his
Fighting
Captain
American.
America. What was it?
Fighting American or no?
Yeah, Fighting American. You got it. So Ed McGuinness left to go write Fighting American, which isn't his creation. It's a Kirby Simon creation, but he was leasing them from Kirby Simon. So this story is interesting. It's just interesting because it has Arthur's pseudonym art, and it has links to Marvel Zombies. So if anybody read Marvel Zombies, it does have a link to it. It opens up with AIM. They want to hire a mercenary to go to the Savage Land and retrieve that you don't know what it is at the time, but retrieve a gas or something so they can make weapons with it. And you don't know what it is. So Deadpool accepts the job. He goes to the Savage Land. He has a run-in with Kazar because you can't really go to the Savage Land and not run into Kazar and Zabu. He has a short run-in, and it's not like a fighting run-in. They both want the same things. They both want Hydra and AIM out of the Savage Land. And he wants to go grab the object and then leave, whatever that turns out to be. And he's supposed to meet an agent in the Savage Land that will tell him where the object is. Well, that person is, I can't remember her name, but it's like a Dr. Beverly. Let's just call her that for now, because I'm doing this all out of my memory. So he goes, and she is so sexy, man. She is like in this shirt, like a researcher shirt, but it's unbuttoned like to a certain point, and then she's wearing like tiny shorts, like these tiny, tiny cut-off shorts. And she often like bends over and you just see butt crack.
It doesn't sound very professional.
Deadpool is always checking her out. Like, he's always like, whoa. but anyway, he meets up with her. They find these headhunters, and there's a big statue of Deadpool, and he goes, wow, they're worshiping me. And he says, that's weird. But the headhunters are really worshiping the Marvel zombie head of Deadpool. And that is the weapon that they have to retrieve for AIM. So, and Hydra wants it at the same time. So shenanigans go on, and dinosaurs, there's, you know, dinosaurs in the Savage Land. There's a whole fight getting over, you know, getting these, there's a scene where he's almost eaten by the headhunters, and the headhunters are like, there's a lot of them. They're just a lot of them, and they all worship the head of Deadpool, and he's taking it from them. So there is I read 1 through 3, and I haven't gotten to the conclusion of the series. She's got stuff all over her back.
Who, Dr. Beverly?
Yeah. Dr. Beverly. And sorry, Harley distracted my train of thought.
That's okay.
But she was barking to come in, and I was on a roll, and I lost my total train of thought. Thanks, Barb.
Harley was barking. Thanks, Barb.
Well, you were saying that Deadpool's...
Oh, they're going after his head, and they run into like a scene where they're... Kazar brings like a herd of dinosaurs into it. One of the dinosaurs gets bit by the head of Deadpool, so it's like zombified. It's a T-Rex, obviously, and followed by a bunch of raptors. And there's a bunch of Hydra agents in suits, and they're all fighting over this head. And meanwhile, AIM kind of realizes they're in like a satellite above the Earth, and they're looking at the Savage Land, and they're like, man, our odds of getting this head are very slim to none with everybody fighting over it. So let's just blow up the whole Savage Land. And that's how it ended in issue 3, is like they have the satellite aimed at the Savage Land, and you don't know if they're going to blow up the entire area or not. But I don't remember. I remember in the credits, Bong Dazzo does the art, but in our database it has Ed McGuinness in there too, so I'm a little confused.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't remember that in the digital copy. I remember Victor Gershler and Bong Dazzo in the credits, but in here it has Victor Gershler / Joe Kelly and Bong Dazo and Ed McGuinness. So I'm a little confused. I have to go back and look at my iPad and find out if I got the credits wrong or what, or if the database is wrong or not.
Mm-hmm.
But something's odd there. But it is a fun, well-drawn series, and there's a lot of quips and jokes in there if you like Deadpool and Fourth World stuff, which I never liked before. Like, my first exposure to Fourth World was Ambush Bug.
I didn't like him either.
I didn't like him, and I wasn't a Keith Giffen fan, and now I'm like the number one Keith Giffen fan. So Ambush Bug is like huge, and Ambush Bug fans should look at the digital app, because there's a new digital first on the DC Infinite app where Ambush Bug is like the Elvira or the Cain or Abel, and he introduces comic books that have never been published. So like they'll go to the vault and they'll pull out something out of the vault that were supposed to be inventory stories, and they were never published. So there's like a Suicide Squad inventory story, and he's like the host introducing the inventory story.
Yeah, so he's like Cain or Abel or something like that.
Yeah, it's really good. So like, if you're an Ambush Book fan, I would highly recommend. It just came out like this week or the last week on the DC
Infinite. I think
Infinite
it's coming
app.
Physically in a few months. I think it's gonna be in the next DC catalog.
If it is, I hope it goes on. Like, I hope it's not just a one-shot. I hope it's like they're digging out all these inventory stories and putting them out there. Because I like this first one with Suicide Squad, because it was a Harley and Deadpool story where they were going after... what were they going after? They were going after the guy who created the neck bombs. Because Waller wanted him killed. So that's who they were going after. But it was a really good story. And then if you like Ambush Bug, so like when I was younger, I hated Ambush Bug. I was like, I didn't get it. And now I read it and I really get it. And that's probably why I get Deadpool and I get Gwenpool. And the current series of Deadpool I am caught up on. So that'll say something about how much I'm loving this stuff, because I don't keep caught up on anything. And if I'm caught up on Deadpool, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of Bloodstone, the daughter, what is her name? Bloodstone, the monster hunter?
Yeah.
Alyssa Bloodstone. If you're a fan of her, she's a big part of the new Deadpool series. But this Merc with the Mouth seemed really interesting. I wanted it more for Rob Liefeld, because he did have one issue in here. And
he's got a couple of the variant covers he did.
Yeah, he's got variant covers, but he actually did the interiors to number 7.
Cool.
Yeah. So, he's the creator or co-creator of Lady Deadpool. So, yeah, that's where I really wanted to get to. And like issue 7 on one of the variants, if you don't go with the Arthur Soydum cover, I don't know what that movie is from that they're
Which
showing
one?
There. Number 7?
Oh,
it doesn't seem familiar to me. But he did seven, the second print of 7-2, or the variant.
Yeah, no, I don't know what it's
and
from.
And that
either.
Is Liefeld doing his jump in the air with his legs crossed kind of thing. He does,
yep.
Like if you're reading Snake Eyes, you'll see that signature pose almost in every book he does, several times. But this is a fun series, and often if I like a series digitally, I'll try to seek it out, or I'll put it in my want list, and if opportunity arises, I'll buy the issues as time goes on. That's all I have for Deadpool Merc with the Mouth.
Very cool.
1 through 3.
All right, sir. So my lighter tone book, I found out that, or I came across that DC released a trade of Justice League Unlimited stories. These were the from the series that it was originally published under the Johnny DC imprint when they had that. So the trade's called Hocus Pocus. It's not a sequential collection of issues. It has issues 11, 14, 25, 33, 37, and 40. I guess it might be a somewhat thematic choice then. The trade's called Hocus Pocus. I read issue 14 called Everybody Limbo, which is the second issue in the trade. Looks like it came out around Halloween time, and I picked this one because of the characters that were in it. It was written by Adam Beechin, with pencils by Carlo Barbary and inks by Walden Wong. And it starts out with Wonder Woman, apparently, saying, "Holy guacamole, I'm smoking hot." Looking in the mirror, and Flash, Booster Gold, Batman, Martian Manhunter, Jon Stewart, and Superman are standing behind her, looking kind of confused. She says, "Said that out loud, didn't I? Sorry, guys, it's me, Deadman." So Deadman is in Wonder Woman's body, requesting help from the Justice League. And over these first few pages, they sort of they use this technique of having Booster Gold whisper questions to Flash, and Flash whisper back the answer as a way to explain things to the reader. And the first one is him asking who Deadman is, and Deadman and Flash gives the explanation, and each time the gag is that Booster's response is, "Oh, sure," even though the explanations are, the answers are kind of, explaining who Deadman is, it's a pretty out there phenomenon. So anyway, the reason that Deadman is there is because Abnegazar, Wrath, and Ghast, the demons, have taken over the realm of Limbo. And so Limbo is the next thing that Booster asks about. The demons have sealed off Limbo because they want it as their own realm. And it's messing up the balance of things in the afterlife and the destinies of all those that are there in Limbo, kind of waiting for their destiny to move on to another place. Superman being Superman, he steps right up to help, and Deadman says, "I appreciate it, but I would actually need you to contact some other members that have the kind of skills that we need in these circumstance." And this is kind of, I think, the last time that Booster whispers a question to the Flash as to who all these people that have shown up are. And we have Dr. Occult, Zatanna, Dr. Fate, Etrigan, and the Angel Zor-El. It's almost kind of like a Justice League Dark thing here happening, and I think this came out in 2005. And there was one more that was requested and Dead Man sighs and says, I should have known he wouldn't have shown up, but he does, in fact, show up, saying, you should have more faith, little spirit, for while my duties often mean I cannot involve myself in missions such as these, occasionally stranger things have happened. And it, of course, is the stranger the phantom stranger. Dead Man in Wonder Woman's body grabs him and hugs him. not a thing you often see happen to the Phantom Stranger.
Oh.
Dead Man's ready to get things on the road. But Zor-El and Etrigan are not quite getting along. One an angel, one a demon. And Superman, ever the peacemaker, insists that regardless of whoever they are outside of the walls of the Justice League satellite, inside they're a part of a team and they need to work together. So that's kind of laying the groundwork for something to occur later. But that settled for now. This Justice League Dark, as it were, set off with Dead Man leaving Wonder Woman's body. If she doesn't complain, unfortunately, because she does, if you've seen her latest movie, she doesn't have really any right to. So Zor-El and Etrigan have a little bit more of some disagreements and problems, and this time Zatanna steps in to, with Dr. Occult's backup, to sort of separate them, and they arrive in Limbo. And they depict Limbo, it's kind of interesting colorist choice. Everything in Limbo is gray, including the souls that are trapped there, pretty much. They've put up sort of barriers that are representing themselves as like brick walls and like the almost like the inflow and outflow tunnels of Limbo. Zatanna's like, well, I can take care of this. And she says, starts to do a spell, Sri-Rab, and someone yells, look out. And the demon Ghast, clamps his hands over her mouth from behind before she can cast her spell. Some of the other demons show up, the other two, and there's a bit of a battle that breaks out. But before really any side can get an upper hand, Zor-El calls out Etrigan for just standing there, and Etrigan says, I see brains were not given to all, but just some. How do you think they knew we would come? And he blasts Zariel's sword out of his hand with some of his fire breath. So Zor-El says, I knew you were a traitor, and Etrigan knocks him out, and flip the page, it's a splash, and there's Zatanna is still being restrained by Ghast with his hands over her mouth, but the other five heroes that have come are restrained in this kind of mystic sphere. And the three demons proclaim that they have this plan, that they want to rip Zatanna's power from her to use it. They request that Etrigan, with his claws, use his powers. And so there's this full page is like Etrigan's claws approach Zatanna's throat, and there's a bunch of little panels of the back and forth between the demons waiting for it to happen and the heroes dreading it to happen. Etrigan says, "Enough of this waiting, let us begin." And you see a panel where he does rake his claws across something. You can't really tell for sure where he's struck, but then Ghast leaps back with pain on his hands, and Etrigan continues his rhyme to undo the plans of demons so darkness may not win. So it was all a ruse on Etrigan's part, and Zatanna's able to use her voice again. She says, "Lakagam snadab evilacid. Magical bonds dissolve," and frees the rest of the heroes. And, you know, they're able to pretty much take care of the demons. And the resolution is, you know, Zariel stops Etrigan from leaving and says, "What's up with all that?" Basically, and Etrigan says, in his rhyming, basically that, you know so little about me that maybe I have other plans, and darkness will rule someday, but today's not the day. If you understand that, you'll understand me. There are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy. And that's the end. So it was fun. I mean, you could see I could see as an adult reader, I don't know if it'd be different as a kid, the twist coming a mile away, you know. But it was neat. I like the cartoon series. I like the characters, seeing the characters used. But it was pretty cool. It's neat. It's good that they're not just like sort of letting this series totally just disappear.
You know? Where did you get that from? The library?
No, Hoop. Well, yeah, technically, but Hoopla.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Cool. Very nice.
Yeah.
Michael, do you have anything?
I thought it was your turn.
Oh, it's my turn?
Yeah, I went last.
Oh, sorry. I fell asleep. I lose track of whose turn it is next. All right, my next one. Sorry about that. Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man, number 37. Another oldie, but a goodie. And I have to admit right here that I am unironically a huge fan of the villain Swarm. Didn't he just appear in that Ant-Man series?
Yeah, he was in the five-issue series.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, it had to do with like the different insect deities, right? Like the gods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is by Bill Mantlo and Jim Mooney. And it's a comic I had gotten back in the day in wherever, where it was one of those three packs in the plastic bags. And just the look of Swarm is just a being made out of bees with a purple cape and white gloves. Although on the cover it shows purple.
I've been trying to finish this series lately. I'm trying.
Yeah,
to.
I finished it about a year or two ago, and
yeah,
I'm very happy.
It is a different read. Like, it's not like amazing. It has like a different feel.
And especially at this time, they really delve deep in his college career and stuff, because he was like not an intern, but he was like a research assistant and stuff. And he had a lot of interactions with the other kids that were also doing the research assistants and the professors and stuff like that, which actually goes along with this particular story, because kind of picks up from the previous issue where Peter's professor had gotten the skeleton, because there's an actual physical human skeleton in there in the middle of that swarm of bees. So he'd gotten that permission to look through the skeleton and do some research on it, because they were doing a lot of what do you call it? What's it called with the study of bugs? It's like I can't remember what it's called. Entomology or something like that, or entomology.
Entomology?
Yeah.
Barb saved the day.
Barb would know. I knew Barb would know.
Yeah.
So he was doing studies with that. So he got permission to study the skeleton, and of course, as always happens, something that he did inadvertently attracted the local bees back to the skeleton, and this actual being used to be a Nazi, Fritz something or other his name is, and it restored his consciousness, and now he's back at it, and Spidey's trying to face off against Swarm, and it's very difficult, because when you think about Spider-Man's powers, he's got his web shooters, he punches, you know, he's got some agility and stuff. You know, the agility can save him a little bit from getting away from a swarm of bees. But really, what do you do to attack a swarm of bees? Because Swarm can direct bees and everything else. And so he's just getting, Spidey's getting stung all over the place. Getting beat up pretty badly. And Swarm's end goal is that he's nurturing this mutant bee queen to grow to a enormous size, and then it will have offspring and basically take over the world. So this is what Spidey's trying to prevent. And he's fighting, and he's losing badly. He's getting stung all over the place, no matter what he does. He tries to seal himself in a web cocoon, and these bees now have already altered enough that they're actually eating through his webbing, and that's not stopping them either. Just when he's just about out, he actually gets thrown into the lab and just is knocked unconscious. However, luckily for him, another student that works with the professor had been experimenting with some insect repellent, and he had landed in a bunch of jars of that and just fell on the ground, just covered in this repellent. So it was enough to keep the bees from finishing him off, although Swarm himself, as a consciousness, thought that Spider-Man was dead. So he starts constructing this huge hive right at Empire State University, and in an effort to start actually nurturing this bee queen. Spider-Man finally comes to, realizes that he's lucky that he's still alive, and all along they've called the Avengers, they called the FF, thinking that they're, you know, Reed Richards or Tony Stark or something is going to come and, you know, come up with something to save the day, but nobody's responding. So it becomes clear that even though Pete doesn't know what he can possibly do as a single hero that seems to be limited in what he, how he can fight off individual bees, he knows that it's down to him. So he had switched back to Peter Parker. The rest of the lab students and the professor ended up seeing him. A lot of people had been stung badly, so they think that he's just another student that got badly stung. They start working more on Marcy, that's the other student's insect repellent, thinking, well, maybe if they give this to the authorities, to the police, they can do something with it. So they make a big batch of this. And Pete knows that, that just to give it to the regular law enforcement, they're going to get murdered. So he ends up grabbing some for himself as well. And he actually mixes it in his web shooters with his webs. And he goes on to say that it's actually compatible. So now his web shooters will actually have the actual webs will have insect repellent, you know, right ingrained in it. The students go out to try to give this stuff to the authorities, but bees quickly swarm them, causing them to drop all their vials and bottles and stuff and just on the ground, no help. Peter switches to Spider-Man, and he's back at Swarm. Swarm's surprised that he's still alive, but they start duking it out, and he actually goes into the hive, and he's able to get in there because he ends up coating his entire costume with the insect repellent in the vat that they had created. So he actually dunks his whole suit in there, puts it on, hopes that it lasts long enough, and goes into the hive. He starts fighting Swarm. He punches Swarm straight in the torso, you know, with his hand going in. Of course, he gets stung like immediately, probably hundreds of times all over his hand. But at the same time, he also deploys his web shooter within Swarm's body. Nothing seems to happen at first, and he thinks that he's in big trouble. But soon enough, the reaction starts happening. And basically, Swarm uses his willpower to keep these bees in line. And he was able to do so only for so long until that repellent really started to take effect in his core. And the bees start just flying away in droves. And that's how Spidey ends up beating him, until there's nothing left of Swarm except for the skeleton and his cape just sitting there. And I remember when I read this came out back in 79, I would have only been 7. It was just so striking. I think to a 7-year-old to see like a villain that looked like that, and to see all those bees leaving, and there's just a creepy skeleton underneath, it really stuck in my mind. I think that's one of the reasons why I'm such a big Swarm fan now. But yeah, that was the end of the issue. He managed to do that, and he saved the day with that insect repellent coated in, you know, on his costume. So he found it ironic that this Marcy hates Peter Parker, but because of her, he was able to defeat Swarm. A good issue. I definitely like this whole run of Spectacular Spider-Man, the early run. And Mike, like to your point, it is different. And then it continues to be so. I love, back to J.M. Matisse, D. Matisse, I love his run on Spectacular Spider-Man in the 80s. That was just absolutely fantastic. And some of the stuff that he did later on with Harry Osborn. And he had a whole
he was a really good Spider-Man writer.
He was fantastic.
People mostly know him for Kraven, you know, Kraven's Hunt.
Sure. Kraven's Last Hunt. Yeah.
But he really got the character.
He's come
in and out of the series.
Yeah.
Even in like multiple volumes.
He did everything with Vermin.
Yeah.
And then he started in with some stuff with Harry Osborn. You start thinking, is Harry Osborn going crazy again? what's going on with it, and that kind of culminates in issue 200. It was just a fantastic run of issues that he did. I highly recommend anyone interested picking up and trying to locate, or I don't know if there's collections of his. It looks like he started writing in the 170s and ended right just after 200. I mean, it's a great run. Not that it has anything to do with what I just covered, but this was a great issue as well.
That's a reread, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. And these both were. I was just kind of in the mood to do some of these Marvels that I read when I was a young kid.
Yep. Well, for me, this is the longest I've been in, I think over the course of the last year, I've been reading a lot of Liefeld and McFarlane and Eric Larson, and not getting out of the mood of it. Like, longest I've ever stayed with, something and not going squirrel. But one of the things that I didn't have a lot of at the beginning of last year, and then I ended up getting close to completing, and I'm 10 issues away from completing a physical run, is Cable. And he had a pretty long run after his first miniseries, which was only 2 issues. Those ones I bought the first 2 off the shelf. I bought a lot of the Liefeld stuff from New Mutants, but not the entire New Mutants. In other words, that's another series that I'm about 10 issues away from completing New Mutants.
With
the exception of 98 or Deadpool's first appearance. For some reason, I missed that, and it's going to be...
It's so funny because 87 digits. Is the hot issue forever because of Cable.
Yeah.
And then that died down. But then shortly after that, that's when Deadpool exploded.
Yeah, Deadpool is going to be a tough issue to get. And I might not ever, I might just leave my facsimile issue in there.
Yeah,
just,
I mean, you could
just call
could
it,
get like a, just a
call
fine
it done.
Copy.
Yeah, it's true. A fine copy is much more affordable, unslabbed, you know?
Yeah.
And just complete it. Because I'm less than 10 issues away. A lot of the issues I'm missing are right before Rob came on. There were the Simonson, Louise was writing, and I missed a lot. I don't know, several in a row of that. But other than that, I have almost a complete run of that. I'm about 10 issues away from Cable, and I did that over the course of a year. I just became infatuated with the character, and I've been reading a lot. And I read 37, 38, and 39. And
Cable.
It's interesting because it says featuring Weapon X, and I thought Weapon X was Wolverine.
He was. Maybe there's an.
And he's not. On the cover, it shows Kane and Cable, and I know Kane is a weapon something. I don't know if he's Weapon 9.
Yeah, I don't know.
Deadpool is Weapon 11 or something after Wolverine, but I don't know the weapons, but he's definitely not Weapon X.
No.
So I don't know if that's a typo or what, because Weapon X to me is Wolverine. Matter of fact... Barry Windsor Smith, Barry Windsor Smith, Marvel Comics Presents, Weapon X storyline is probably the most popular story to come out of Marvel Comics Presents, right? The one thing that people remember. And this one features Kane, and he and Copycat are together, and if you guys remember who Copycat was in X-Force, early issues of X-Force, Domino was being impersonated by Copycat, and she has the mutant ability to not just gain their physical form, but everything, their hormones, their everything that would trigger anything, even their brain pattern Which means that a psychic like Professor X or a Nate couldn't figure out if it was an impersonator. That's her mutant ability to copy something is like at another level. It's not like just like the human target I put on a face or something like that. It's she assumes everything. So that's her ability. So Domino hates Copycat because she impersonated her for over a year in Rob Liefeld's X-Force. And they arrive in a time right after Onslaught. So, you know, Heroes Reborn and Onslaught and all that stuff with Rob Liefeld and Jim Lee taking over the Fantastic Four, Avengers, Thor, Iron Man. There was a couple of titles, and they moved them off world until I think Franklin Richards brought them back. But so they were gone, and one of the villains of the books is an FF villain. His name is Psycho Man. He is very much like the Purple Man. He has the ability to instill, but more from like a contraption perspective. Like Purple Man is more organic, like he can influence you or make you do things. It seems like I don't know how he does it from a mechanical perspective, but he always has like buttons, and Psycho Man will press like fear or
Yeah,
all the
on his
different
chest, on that
emotions.
big thing, right?
Yeah, he
That he's
has a
sticking out.
device and he'll influence yours. Well, he's influencing fear and stuff in Kane about human that the humans are coming after him, and all Kane wants to do is hang out with Copycat and leave a normal life. Like he doesn't want to deal with the situation anymore of being a mutant or trying to be a hero or a villain or a mercenary or whatever he is. He just wants to hang out and be a normal person. And he can't do that. And Psycho Man is sort of trying to come after him because his cybernetics are from the future. I think Cable actually saved Kane. Like at one time he was dying, and I think Cable saved him and put more cybernetics in him. And that's what Psycho Man is after. He's after these cybernetics. So he wants to take him into the Microverse, which brings in the Micronauts, which is very interesting. But he wants to build his army based on the cybernetics in the Microverse and kind of take over the Microverse. And then after he takes over the Microverse, he wants to take over Earth and our universe because the Fantastic Four are not there to stop him. So he thinks without Reed Richards being the guardian between the Microverse and our universe that he could actually pull this off if he has Kane. So he goes after Kane. Cable's there sort of trying to find out what's going on with Kane, but they have a fight obviously because Domino and Copycat hate each other. But right after that fight, they realize Psycho Man is after Kane, and Copycat sacrifices herself and takes the form of her lover, Kane, and he takes Copycat into the Microverse. And then all of a sudden a ship appears, and they're like, well, that's a convenient plot point. Like, how does this ship come out of nowhere? And then Cable and Kane and Domino get in it, and I don't think they've ever seen this ship before, but they get in it and think they're gonna go after it's never explained like what made them think they could get into this ship and go after Psycho Man. Like that's the part, the whole of the plot that you don't understand. Like how did they, you know how the ship appeared is the Commander Ran, who's part of the Micronauts, sent the ship to Earth to get some help because of what Psycho Man was doing. And they just coincidentally got into the ship. He was sending it to get X-Men because there, back in the 80s, there was a X-Men Micronauts crossover. So they knew each other. and he was sending the ship to go get X-Men, and it just happened to pick up Cable, Kane, and Domino. And then they go to the Microverse, and they meet Commander Ran, Mari. Is her name Mari? I can't remember.
Yes.
Mari, yeah. And a Bug. And then there's nobody else. And they say, well, where are the rest of the Micronauts? And they're like, well, they've all been killed or destroyed. So Bug is kind of like the Microverse's Spider-Man in terms of wit. Like, he's the Joker. You know, he's always talking. He won't shut up. Mari is always there being sexy. And Commander Ran is kind of like the Captain Kirk. And they assembled a team to go after Psycho Man. And that's the whole plot of this, is they go after Psycho Man. He doesn't have the cybernetics that he needs from Kane. He eventually captures Kane and has a copycat as well, but they're able to save Kane, and the cybernetics never get into the soldiers, and they defeat Psycho Man and put him in stasis. And then there's a reference to, like, early Micronauts issues where I guess the Commander Ran was in stasis for, like, a long period of time, because Cable asks, well, how are you going to keep Psycho Man in prison for this many, you know, for a long period of time? And he goes, well, I was in stasis for years. And they put Psycho Man in stasis and then return to Earth, and the copycat and Kane go off on a motorcycle together, and they just want to go about their normal life. And Cable and Domino are off to their next adventure. So that's how that ends. Does anybody have anything else?
I have a movie.
Okay.
Last weekend, me and Stacy showed the kids the 1980s classic, The Last Starfighter.
Oh, that's such a good one.
I'm telling you, Mike, it was crazy. I haven't seen that movie, and I don't know how long. And as it's playing, I am mouthing the dialogue along with the movie. I'm like, oh, my God. Yeah. I haven't seen this movie in probably, God, it's got to be almost 30 years, but I had seen it so many times that I knew exactly what the next line was going to be. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it.
It's a great movie. coincidentally, there was something on Facebook recently where somebody was going to do a podcast with that actor, and he was looking for questions.
Oh, really?
To ask him. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Chris, have you ever seen The Last Starfighter?
I think so. Is that
the video game recruitment to become a starfighter?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Robert Preston plays the alien recruiter. He's the only actor of note.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen it since I was a kid, though.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much how I was until.
Well, the female actress was like a Knight of the Comet and a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, she was. She was. But yeah, you're right. You're right. But I mean, I don't know her name.
I know she was in like a lot of like cult favorites.
Yeah, yeah, that's very true. But for anyone that hasn't seen it, basically, like Mike said, this teenager's older teenager's like just about to graduate from high school, kind of feels like he's stuck at the mobile home park that he lives in. His mom is like the manager there, and so he's always going from place to place in the mobile homes to like fix, you know, everyone's issues and stuff like that. He's just very handy. He kind of feels he just wants to get out and explore. For fun, he plays the Starfighter video game that's at the manager's office, and you know, he just plays and plays till one day he totally beats the game. And apparently, and he's very likable, like everyone in at the park likes this guy because he's always helping everybody. And like as he's almost beating the game, like literally the whole park comes out to watch him, and he beats the whole game. And and gets the high score. That night, in the middle of the night, he actually he ends up. The strange guy comes in this weird looking car, and tells him to get in. And basically, what it is they fly off to outer space to another planet, and that video game was installed at different planets in different locations all over the galaxy. Anyone that was did well enough could potentially be able to actually pilot a real starship to help against this evil empire that is trying to take over the galaxy. And so what happens is that this kid, he's kind of overwhelmed and thrown into this, and he's like, this was not my plan. I wasn't, because he wasn't told this ahead of time until he got to the planet. He's like, I don't want to be a starfighter or whatever. And so that recruiter, played by Robert Preston, ends up starting to take him back. While he does that, their base is totally there's a sneak attack and destroyed, until there's really no starfighters left. So he ends up changing his mind. They turn around. They see that there's no one left. There is a navigator. He's an alien looking creature that navigates the star ship, and the kid does the gunnery. And so he's the last starfighter. And of course, you know, as you could guess, he manages to defeat the main empire's ship and saves the galaxy and comes back to Earth to pick up the girl and then flies back off into outer space. And it's just, you know, I mean, it's just so much fun to watch again after I'd seen it so many times. And the kids both liked it. Zach really, really liked it. Allie liked it as well, but Zach liked it more. And they just had a lot of fun watching it.
Did you watch it on? Did you watch it on DVD or did you watch?
Yeah, I got it was like, I don't remember, like $8 or something a while ago on Amazon on Blu-ray. So I picked it up a while back, and you know, we were just having kind of a lazy weekend, so I said, okay, kids, we're gonna watch a movie this weekend, but let's all pick and we'll vote. And said, I said, you know, I'll put out like four movies and we'll take a vote on it. So, I don't know if you guys ever saw the Apple Dumpling Gang with Don Knotts and Tim Conway.
Of course. Those two were some of my favorites.
I showed that.
Private Eyes is my favorite team up with those
Private
guys.
Private Eyes
is
number one, but that the kids can't watch Private Eyes yet because it's a little, it parts are a little.
It's PG, but it's, I guess it could have a lot of horror, like scary elements to it.
It has like more racy stuff, like the maid and stuff like that. I'd like them to be a little bit older. But so Apple Dumpling Lane we watched last year, but I bought a Don Knotts DVD set. So I put out Apple Dumpling Gang Rides Again. We did another option was the original Herbie the Love Bug. I had the first Iron Man. And then Last Starfighter. So they
picked
for
it.
Iron Man.
What did you say? I said they picked Last Starfighter over that stuff.
So they picked Iron Man. But we all get a vote.
So
I knew what I was going to vote for. But I didn't know what Stacy was going to vote for.
Yeah,
so
but
I
that's
said,
two votes. That's two votes for Iron Man. How are you breaking that tie?
Exactly. So they ask Stacy. Stacy picks Last Starfighter. I go, guess what, guys? I'm picking Last Starfighter too. It's a tie. What are we gonna do? I asked the kids. They said, rock, paper, scissors. I said, okay. So I said, who wants to do it? And Allie said she wanted to. She wanted me to. I said, okay. She picks rock. I pick paper. We won. Last Starfighter it was, Mike.
No, rock beats everything, according to one movie I heard. Rock beats paper, rock beats.
That's what Allie told me, too.
I can't remember what movie that's in. We just saw a movie that talked about that, and they were like, rock beats everything. I don't remember.
That's what she was telling me as well. But I mean, the kids are such good sports. Like, you know, they're only seven, but like we do this. We're like, okay, we won. I mean, there's no busing, there's no nothing. So we're gonna watch something today, and we're gonna just they're gonna be able
that,
to pick.
That's cool that they enjoyed it though, because
yeah.
There is like a cultural. I don't know how a kid could wrap themselves around something that is so like yes, there's a futuristic aspect to it, but uh-huh. There were no like cell phones or anything. You had a payphone at the trailer park. There was an arcade, right. A stand-up arcade, and I don't know if they've even experienced the stand-up arcade.
They only have because there is a children's museum in Rochester, which is about an hour from us.
Yeah.
To and on the second floor they have an entire area that is just video arcade games. So me and Zach one time, can't remember what the promotion was, but somehow we got a ton of they gave you a ton of tokens on one particular occasion. I think they were featuring, because they have different like exhibits throughout the year like any other museum would. I think they were featuring video games, so we all got a bunch of tokens, and me and Zach played Rampage for probably a half an hour to 45 minutes. So, and Allie and Stacy were wandering around. They were playing other games too. So because of that, they're familiar with actual arcades and arcade games. Otherwise, they would have had no point of reference at all.
Well, at some point, you could sit him down or sit the kids down and watch Rampage.
Yeah, right.
And say, you played the video game, and now you can watch The Rock.
Exactly. No, it was a lot of fun though. I'm glad that they liked it as well. I think
some movies are timeless. Like they just have the right comedy and the right characterization that any generation can enjoy.
And you have to get the kids when they're still young. Like if I
because if they got them later, it would have been tougher. Yeah.
Yeah. But right now everything's new to them and they've got wide eyes for it. Doesn't make a difference. So
yeah.
We're trying to show them as many old stuff that we liked as kids while they're still young.
It's one of my favorite movies, my science fiction movies of all time. Chris Campbell, it's one of his too, he's big on it. He Chris Campbell loved that movie so much that he wrote a sequel.
Really?
Yeah, he wants to do a comic book of it. And he loves that thing.
I don't know how it did in the box office. I never saw it. I saw it when it was out on cable, like over and over and over again.
Yeah, for me it was seeing it at the theater, but then I saw it on cable over and over and over again.
But it was fun. It was fun. I told them today I'll put out four movies again, but this time they just get to pick. We're not gonna pick.
Yeah, because they threw you a bone. They let you at least win rock, paper, scissors, even though rock beats everything.
That's right.
I agree with Allie. Yeah, rock beats everything.
Rock beats rock.
I mean,
rock beats rock. Yeah, it depends on who's got the rock. I give those kids they really impressed me though, Mike, because they've always been very. Like, not, they don't have chance. They
That's
don't
because
really
you
have
raised
chance.
Them right. I think you're doing a good job because they're sensitive to, I guess, listening.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Reason, which is what you try to get instill in every kid, right? I mean,
oh, yeah.
if kids learn to reason or think for themselves and understand why things are, they'll come out right.
Yeah. Yeah.
They'll know what's right from wrong. Yeah,
that's all that I got.
All right.
Oh, I just want to make a recommendation. This is not retro, but if you liked Schitt's Creek, there is a TV show on Netflix called Kim's Convenience.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Also a Canadian show that's based in Toronto.
Yeah, Bill.
About a
Bill
Canadian
watches
family that.
That
owns a convenience store, and my God, Stacy watched it and she's like, "This is funny." I go, all right, fine, I'll watch it with you. I wasn't sure, you know, what I would think. We've gone through like eight episodes now. It's I think the father's hilarious. So Kim's convenience.
Yep. All right. Anything else, Chris?
That's it.
All right. We can wrap this one up.
Talk to you guys.
You guys have a wonderful week. And we'll talk to you guys in 2 weeks, hopefully.
Yep.
And you can reach Rob on the Twitter at Rob Krieger. I'm at Mike Myers Brunch. And Chris is at Mythmaking ETC.
Not Monkey Robot Face.
Not Monkey Robot Face.
I was sitting here tense, waiting for
it. Well, it didn't sound like Mike was going to say it. So.
Yeah. Nice of you to step in there.
Yeah.
Go Chiefs.
I can't believe you did that. You changed it. Like, I don't. Does anybody like successfully change their Twitter handle and people actually do that? Like, follow and adjust. I don't know anybody who's done it. But we're at geekbrunchpodcast.com, and you can find us. Well, you can find me on Facebook at Geek Brunch Podcast. Click the like button, and you can comment on there. And I think that's about it.
It's always a pleasure, gentlemen.
Yeah. Go watch The Last Starfighter and see where all the hubbub's about. It's a great movie. All right. See you guys.
All right.
All right.
Take care, guys.
Bye.
Great week.
Bye-bye.